Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for April 7th, 2013. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes. Well, Catherine, you said greetings from Atlanta. Have you had a chance to go down and see any of the concerts? Because I tell you what, the Final Four has brought more free concerts to Atlanta than any time I can remember.
No, I avoided all that traffic. I got stuck in it on... I can't from where I live.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'd have to drive, like, way far away and park at MARTA and then... But I don't like crowds, but I think it's great. I mean, you know, they have a Ferris wheel at Centennial Olympic Park, and everybody seemed to be having... You know, I saw on the news, everybody seemed to be having fun. A friend of mine was down there, and she said it was a blast. So, yay for the people who enjoy that stuff. It's just not my thing, but...
Yeah, it was so funny. I mean, you know, you think Final Four, you think, hey, they're bringing basketball. They have brought more concerts, and not just like, you know, B-level bands. I mean, some people that could headline or also people that are very, very popular right now. And so
Luda.
I'm amazed that they've done that. Kim?
The good old Georgia Dome was what I was sitting here thinking about. What if that wasn't there? What if it was torn down and there was a stadium out in the suburbs somewhere?
But it is, and it exists, and so it functions. It's not like the NCAA is saying, "Hey, we need a new stadium to be here." They're good with
it. Right, 100,000 people are there spending their money this weekend. Thanks to the Georgia Dome being there. I hope the city fathers in Atlanta are paying attention.
Yeah,
I think they're paying attention. It's the private people who need to pay attention. I think the city's very aware of it.
All right.
And the new building will probably continue to get those events, no problem, but I'm in the current building list too. Well, let's move on to some political topics. And one that came up, I mean, it was like the next day, that just made my jaw drop, was the governor of Virginia, Bob McDonnell, a political donor, and I guess you may could say a lobbyist, because I guess this is someone that just didn't give because they like his politics necessarily. They also do business with the state of Virginia. They paid $15,000 towards his daughter's wedding reception. You know, 200 guests came. It was at the governor's mansion, but they paid for the wedding reception. Now, I just can't imagine that this isn't some type of ethics violation. Catherine, when you saw this, what did you think?
I just think it's amazing that people can be so bold and do something like that and not hide it, you know, I'm just sort of shocked by things like that. Like, I just think, don't they realize that it looks bad and shouldn't be done?
Yeah, it is bad. Now, Tim, you were telling us the way that Bob McDonald's going to get around this, or at least the way that may keep him out of trouble and will be his alibi, if you will. Share that.
Well, McDonald has himself not really commented on it, but one of his aides did say that the reason that the governor didn't even report this was because of the fact that the gift was not made to him, but was made to his daughter. Would you that... kind of stinks to high heaven. Just a few days before this wedding, and the perception. The governor's wife was on a plane to go to a conference to speak on behalf of this company who was hawking some dietary supplement, and she was speaking to industry people and scientists and others talking about the benefits of this thing. Well, I mean, and they've been one of his biggest contributors. The company really needs this particular thing to sell that she was pushing. They've had a reception for these people at the governor's mansion before. I mean, come on, they're as thick as thieves here. I don't know if technically he's going to get around it with this thing or not, but I think that's what they're going to try to say, that the gift was not for him but for his daughter.
Yeah, and before I comment on that, I have to wonder if the wedding band played "I Want a New Drug" by Huey Lewis in the News. that might have been quite
that's
appropriate.
Evil.
But here's the thing. I mean, not every wedding, but many, many weddings, you know, in America and probably throughout the world, the family of the bride, and a lot of times, I guess there's a movie with Steve Martin and I guess Spencer Tracy before that called Father of the Bride, talking about how the father had to pay all this money. Well, this is a case where Bob McDonald got $15,000 that he didn't have to pay. So to me, this alibi is just terrible. There's no way that you can't see this as a gift of $15,000 straight out. I mean, almost like a cash payment, which would have to be an ethics violation in Virginia.
And did we mention, I don't think we did, that this company is presently under investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission? Oops.
Yeah, I just have to think that this is terrible. Now, one thing, in Virginia, for those of that are not familiar, they have the one-term governor. Now, of course, the theory is, one term, they don't have to be beholden to special interests, and they can do what they were going to do in their one term and then move on. Well, in this case, this may be a case of where somebody can say, hey, I'm going to move on. So if Bob McDonald never wants to run for elective office, he's never got to face the voters after this. Could this be a problem where you want to relook at that policy? What do you think, Catherine?
Well, I'm sorry. I just can't help but laugh about this. I think you raise a good question about that policy. I'm not a term limit person. I think, the voting booth is your term limits, but the interesting thing will be where he ends up working after he leaves the governor's office.
Yeah, I mean, he could get a job, I guess, with this group here, if possible.
Exactly.
It would be even worse. But then, of course, a lot of these Virginia governors, they like to run for their offices, a la George Allen, Mark Warner, Tim Kaine. Their last three governors served in the U.S. Senate. Tim?
And as we all know, this guy has been mentioned as possibly running for the Republican nomination for president. Well, what does this do to that?
I'd like to think it hurts it, but you never know.
Yeah, you'd have to think that.
Well, I mean, it's going to come up. It's going to come up if he runs. I mean,
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to think it'd come up. And I tell you what, I just don't see Bob McDonald as being, even without this, I don't see him being a great candidate. I mean, maybe he runs just to keep his name out there as a possible VP or something like that. But I couldn't imagine he's the solution to their problems. And then if he plays this type of good old boy politics, it has to make it worse.
Yeah, I was about to say, David, doing something like this, don't you feel that he would be essentially burning his bridges?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a move to say, hey, I want to line my bank account more than further my political career. And,
really?
As long as you do that legally, that's a choice that you can make. But, you know, in this case, this may not be illegal, but it sure isn't ethical. And it's
yeah.
the kind of thing that gets, you know, tighter ethics regulations written in your state, I would think. But, you
yeah.
know, you say, hey, you can't give money to the immediate family of, you know, a politician, that kind of thing. Well, let's continue to move on, and let's move down to Georgia. And there's actually two Georgia Senate stories, one surrounding a current senator, Johnny Isaacson, and then one about the race to fill Saxby Chambliss' seat. Let's talk about Johnny Isaacson first. They are doing web ads, and also I saw a television commercial. Now, it was a different group from the different side aimed at both Isaacson and Chambliss, both about gun control. Now, the web ad that I think I sent y'all the link to, they are trying to attack Johnny Isaacson to the right, I guess you will, or the right of him. They're trying to keep him in line, if you will, because they think he is going to be one of the Republican senators that might back, really it's just the background checks that about 80% of the American public supports. A good, healthy majority of gun owners support these background checks, but they're apparently one of these fringe right-wing groups is not supportive of Johnny Isaacson's possibly, you know, supporting these and not towing the far conservative line. Catherine, did you see the ads, and what did you think of them?
I did see them. I think it's kind of a waste of effort for them. I mean, like you said, the majority by significant numbers believe that background checks are a legitimate way to try to, you know, I hate to say control, but to limit access to guns by people who shouldn't have them, who are mentally ill or, you know, have been convicted of crimes. So I guess I don't understand why these people, these fringe people are, I mean, I understand they just believe no gun control at all, but to attack a sitting senator who's, you know, generally pretty conservative seems
yeah.
Sort of pointless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess, what was the old ad he did back in 96 when he didn't win Rock the Boat, Johnny? I guess they're afraid he may rock the boat, not toe the line. Tim, what did you make of these ads on the web ads?
Yeah, you saw who was putting them out, this group called the National Association for Gun Rights, not to be confused with the NRA. This bunch thinks the NRA is a bunch of stooges who are nothing more, they think, than the mouthpiece of gun companies who fund them. You know, I'm not going to get into that, but I'm just saying, you know, these people are a bit further to the right in their thinking even than the NRA would be. And I'm with
yeah.
Catherine. They're going after a pretty conservative guy. And I'm not sure they've got a leg to stand on here. So I just wonder what kind of response they're going to get. It would be much more effective if it was the NRA, the mainstream group, leading this effort on this particular ad instead of them. I guess that's what I'm saying, wouldn't you think?
I love how you say the, a group to the right and thinks the
NRA
is a bunch of moderates. And you're probably right. But isn't
they
that
are.
The same thing? There's probably, you know, there's some kind of American Nazi party or probably a German Nazi party still existing. And there's probably a group that says that they're a bunch of moderates that believe in integration. You know, that's how scary it is. You can go so far to the right, and there's still a bunch of people, man, that are so far to the right of you, they think you're in the middle.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre how people are seeing how far out to the right they can get on every issue, and it's just insane. Well, now, there's another thing going on, still talking about the gun issue. It's more from the middle, I guess you'd say, and it has a guy sitting on the back of a pickup truck, camo hat, beard, with a shotgun, saying that he actually wants Saxby Chambliss and Johnny Isaacson to support background checks, to call him and support him, because he's saying he wants to hunt and he wants to have his hunting rifle, but he's not a, you know, mentally insane or have a long criminal history, so therefore it's not going to affect him. Now these ads, they ran on, I know it ran on Saturday Night Live, I think it ran on the Chris Matthews Show, probably ran a bunch of other places because I didn't watch that much TV this weekend. Now, this is on TV, and this is from the other side. Catherine, have you seen the ad? And just if you hadn't, just based on the description, what do you think it's going to do to the two Georgia senators?
I have seen a couple of those ads, and I thought they were actually pretty effective. At first, I was like, what is this? Because I don't always pay attention when the ads are on. So the first one just kind of went by me, and I was like, I don't know what that is. And then the second one, I tried to pay a little closer attention. And I thought that if you were sort of on the fence about, if you were, you know, to the right of me, and you were on the fence about background checks, that you might look at that and say, well, he kind of makes a good point.
Yeah. Tim, have you seen them? What do you make of them?
Yeah, yes, I have seen them. Matter of fact, this particular ad that you're talking about with the guy and his gun is playing in various forms and targeting various states all over the country. I think, like Catherine, that it is a very effective ad. I think it speaks to the great middle on the issue of background checks and closing gun show loopholes. I think that's a very popular idea. I think that's an idea that can cut across partisan lines. And I think that's something that at least is going to pass the U.S. Senate. But, hey, that bunch in the House, you know what? I long ago, David, quit trying to figure them out. Perhaps you can shed some light on what they're going to do on this issue.
Well, I have no clue on that much. But now,
they won't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, do nothing Congress, much like 48 when Truman ran against that same bunch. Well, Tim, you say that, is it the same bearded guy? Or do they have a different guy for each state? Because I wouldn't believe this fellow's sitting on a Georgia pickup truck.
Well, the national one I saw, it looked like the same fella. I wasn't really paying attention, but there's a bearded guy holding the gun. I mean, how many bearded – well, I guess they could find bearded actors in other states, but I think they're playing this ad all over the country with the same people just changing some of the wording, you know, and stuff like that to target a particular area. Yeah.
Yeah, changing the senator. I'm not naive enough to believe they would actually go to every state and film a different bearded guy with a pickup truck, the right license plate, talking to his senator. I'm teasing around with you, but so they like this guy across the country. I guess his accent was good enough to play to any of the states they decided to target. Obviously, I'm not ready to target Massachusetts.
As far as Hunter is every man, you know. So,
yeah, you can play in Michigan and Georgia and Indiana, but probably not maybe the New England states or California, possibly. Well,
not Cape Cod. I wouldn't.
Yeah, so I guess that got it. Done
I don't know,
there.
But some of those rural, you know, some of that rural Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, I think it would play there.
Yeah,
rural New York.
Yeah, just see what you have. Well, let's kind of segue over into the U.S. Senate race. Now, the Republicans are just flying in. We talked about Phil Gingrey last week. Tom Price has changed his website. It actually, the only place it says Congressman Tom Price, he's got kind of a new coming soon look. But then it has, you know, kind of Georgia's conservative voice. So it looks like he's gearing up for a run, and that didn't come as a big surprise. Well, Democrats obviously need a candidate since this race is worthy of taking a shot at. And people are talking more and more about Michelle Nunn, and Lori Geary off of WSB News, I guess through her Twitter feed, said that Michelle Nunn is definitely looking at this race. And for those of you, like, who's that? She is the CEO of the Points of Light Foundation, a big philanthropic organization in Georgia, and she's also the son, daughter of former Senator Sam Nunn. So I guess she has both of those things going for her. She looked at the Senate back in, was it 2002, I guess it was 2004, because it would have been against Max Cleland. 2004, does that sound right? Maybe 2006, somewhere in the mid-2000 single digits she looked at this thing, but she decided not to run. Apparently this time she sounds like she's a little further along. Tim, what do you think of her as a candidate?
Well, I think that would be just delightful. Jim Galloway first mentioned this, so kudos to him. And as you said, she is in talk about town. She is interested. I'd love to see her do it. At least we would have a named candidate in the race. That's something that we desperately are looking for this open Senate seat, is a named candidate. And what bigger name than the name of Nunn? It would be very interesting to see how she would do, especially if the Republicans had a knockdown, drag-out primary with about six or seven candidates going at it.
Yeah, I think, and this would also be a good thing, because it's probably a year, if one good Democratic candidate gets in, they're pretty much going to clear the field, just because
right.
We know that if we have a blood fest on our side, that's not really going to help us. And it would pretty much assure that we might get a female as the standard bearer, and then we could try to see what we can do about this continuing Georgia problem on both sides of the aisle with no female statewide candidates or certainly at the top of the ticket even really getting a chance. Catherine, what do you make of Michelle Nunn's candidacy?
Well, I'm with Tim. I think it would be great, especially if she was the only candidate running. I did look at that thing that you sent. That tweet from Lori Geary was like at the beginning of February, and this sort of meme has been going on for quite a while. And I'm just a little bit surprised that she hasn't actually declared yet. She's, you know, we still have some time, and it's not bad to not have a candidate for a little bit longer, because we can let the Republicans go at it and, you know, sort of stay out of the fray. But we're going to need to have a candidate in the next, you know, few weeks if we want to, you know, if they want to raise enough money and all that stuff. And I think that it looks like it's down to, you know, from what I understand from the conversations that I've heard, that it's really down to Representative Barrow or Ms. Nunn. And you know, she's probably more liberal. I don't know her, but just from, you know, she lives in town. She's, you know, born and raised in Atlanta. She might be a little bit more liberal than some people would like. However, I think if they end up with someone like Paul Brown or Tom Price, I think that a Michelle Nunn candidate gives them a run for their money.
Yeah, I tell you what, you mentioned that tweet came from February. That means I saw it on Daily Kos Elections, which I follow a little more closely than Lori Geary's Twitter feed. So that's why I didn't. It came to my attention then. And actually, it's gotten some more buzz. I believe Political Wire also picked up on it. For some reason, they may be 6 weeks late, but I guess better late than never. So
oh yeah, I mean it's just
now,
it has been in the you know air whatever for quite a while, and you know there are advantages to a candidate like Michelle Nunn, because she doesn't have to quit her job, she doesn't have to you know, she can if she didn't prevail, she could just go right back into whatever she's doing now. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, any of these elected candidates, they're going to have to give up their, you know, like
right.
Representative Barrow is going to have to give up his congressional seat, and that's a little bit of a concern. So
yeah.
Now as far as two things here. One, I would say you said she might be more liberal. Really, she's tabula rasa. We don't know what her stances on any certain thing are. and she could actually roll that out whichever way she feels comfortable rolling it out. Obviously, that's how she feels, and she can frame it however, whereas, you know,
that's
Congressman
true.
Barrow has a record, good or bad, of votes. You can also say, hey, that's experience. Because in here, and then the thing about him is, then it, I don't know what he's thinking, but if he's thinking, yeah, I can continue to hold my my congressional seat, then that's a real factor, because obviously him having that congressional seat is very symbolic, him being the, you know, the final white Democrat.
Oh, he can't keep his congressional seat down for Senate.
But, no.
He has to resign.
What I mean is, like, if he can continue to run and win that seat, the prevailing thought, at least on the Republican side, is, oh, well, he could win underneath Barack Obama being on the ticket, but he won't have the president on the ticket, and with this new district, we'll get him. Now, he obviously has to do some polling and make his decision, because if he does polling, it shows, like, you put the model through, and a lot of those Democrats stay home because it's not a presidential race, and he can't win, then he might be best served moving up. And so that's something he's going to have to look at. Now, he had a lot of time to make that decision if nobody's in that race, but now if a strong candidate like Michelle Nunn's looking at it, he may have to begin to make his decision based on his race, either way, and her timeline to beat her to the punch. Tim?
Well, I'm going to say that he's going to know before the fact whether or not she's going to run, and he's going to know it before we know it. I think that's just the way it is in politics.
Oh, yeah.
And I really hope she does run. It would be something great to energize female voters and her bloodline. You know, there are no questions there about her chops, not with Sam Nunn and Carl Benson and her family. You know, she would be perfect. And Catherine made a very good point. Anybody else that has to run is going to have to give up whatever elective office they have for a job they may not win. We might have to lose two trying to get one. In her case, nothing to risk as far as political office goes. I think she would be the perfect candidate. I really hope it's her.
Yeah, now let me throw out another scenario. The DSCC, they're in charge of recruiting for this race. You know, they can put their own polls in the field. What if they put a poll in the field in John Barrow's congressional district, and it's a voter model based on a lower turnout, certainly a lower Democratic turnout, shows he's going to lose. They also poll statewide, says he can be competitive running statewide. They poll for Michelle Nunn, shows she can be competitive statewide. Is there opportunity? Now, the DSCC wouldn't be so interested in this other part, but I'm sure they're friends with the Democratic Governors Association, that they get one candidate in the governor's race and one candidate in the Senate race, and if that were to happen, who fits best where? Tim?
Well, I would say she certainly, because of her bloodlines, fits better running for the U.S. Senate. Whereas Congressman Barrow, with his natural base here, would be better served running for governor.
I agree.
Yeah, and really, I mean, like I said, if I could just have one seat, I'd take the governor's race because, I mean, what the Republicans are doing to the state is just decimating us. And if we could have someone that had any semblance of pride in government, if you will, they could restore education funding. They could begin to try to do something about transportation. They could just focus on things that people want to focus on, frankly, instead of some of the nonsense we see out of the far right-wing legislators we have. So, therefore, it would be good to get a solid, quality candidate in both races. And obviously, the Senate seat, because it's an open seat, has got more attention. But the governor's race, I mean, those of us that have to live 365 days in the state, I think we all care more about it, don't we?
But let me ask a question here about Congressman Barrow. We just heard stories of gloom and doom 2 years ago, after the district was redrawn, said, well, there's just no way he's going to survive. And he not only survived, he won by decent enough margin. Why would he turn around then 2 years later and lose in the same district?
I don't know. That's for the polling and the people that do voter models and people that try to figure out how you get out the vote, how, you know, what's the upside on getting out the vote. I mean, if you sat me a room with the data for a day, a week, I might could give you a good guess. I'm, you know, across the state speculating. I don't have the data to make the informed guess I would, but
well,
if you gave me the data, I think I could, and
that
I'm sure
being said,
Congressman
speculate.
Barrett can support it.
That being said, speculate for me. Why would he lose now if he didn't lose in the same district 2 years ago?
You have to look at the fall off, you know, from those years. How steep is it going to be? Like I said, you have to pull out Richmond County. You have to pull out Chatham County. I'm trying to think of the county. I know Clark County is no longer in his district. Liberty County, whatever counties are in his district, you have to pull out and see how much fall off there is. Both sides, Republican and Democrat, because I tell you what, there's probably going to be some Republican fall off too, because it's just not as interesting of a race, if you will, because of the way politics has become so nationalized. It may be less important. You know, they say that your county commissioner affects your life a whole lot more than, say, the president of the United States. But people have been, you know, it's 24/7, 4 years at a time, you know, everything's president, president, president. And so people don't realize that, so they're less likely to come out to vote. I don't know, but if you saw the numbers, I'm sure somebody is running them. And probably some of these folks that just, you know, live to crunch numbers have looked at it.
Well,
but that's the kind of decision he's got to make soon.
Well, one more question then. Do you think, as Catherine and I do, that he would be better served running for governor and her for Senate?
I do think, because of his executive experience, because remember, he was on the Board of Commissioners once, didn't he, for Clark County prior to being there. I think he might have a better handle on some of those state, local issues, because a lot of the state is helping fund local governments and working in cooperation. I think he'd have a special, you know, attunement to that. And I tell you, a lot of times you hear people, if they have the choice between legislative and executive, they choose the governor's race. It's seen as the one where you can do more good, because you don't have to worry about 99 other people just in your chamber to get on board. So if he thought, hey, it's as good a shot either way, he might look at that if he sees the congressional race is probably less than a 50% endeavor. So, you know,
okay.
We shall see. Yeah. I mean, but you have Republican congressmen. You have Tom Price, Paul Brown, and Phil Gingrich that are all giving up the same thing we're talking about him giving up. And for sure, two of the three of those gentlemen are going to be out of luck.
Yes.
So obviously people give away congressional seats for the thought at higher office. So it's not unheard of. You know. So, well, I guess it kind of segues in. I say this with a huge groan. Y'all may join with me. It was a collective groan. Apparently, with Phil Gingrich leaving his seat, yes, it does get worse, or the possibilities get worse. Barry Loudermilk is thinking about running for Congress. Now, I tell you what, it really surprises me, but yes, you can do worse than Phil Gingrich. Does this guy have any chance, Catherine?
If he's the only Republican running, absolutely.
Now, he would be running in Buckhead. I mean, this is not a Buckhead Republican, right, Tim?
Yeah, right. Believe me, I've wondered if this was a Republican from this planet, some of the things he said. You're going to love this, though, guys. There is actually a draft Barry Loudermilk for Congress page on Facebook. And it already has 119 likes. it looks this week on the local radio station down here in Rome, WRGA, he did say that, although he can't officially say it yet, that he's running. So he's running. And this is the guy, well, David, you could tell us about some of the kooky things he said about light bulbs and toilets and such, you know.
Once again, he home churches. He does not trust a minister that's been trained in a seminary to lead his family in worship. He, in the past, I don't know if he currently does, he is home churched. I mean, that is somebody who is very skeptical of greater society if you don't trust men of the cloth, if you will. I don't know if you need to say much more. I will make a statement on how times have changed, and this may hurt Barry Loudermilk in his future campaigns. This is a guy that won in 2004, and one of the big reasons he won was because of the, you know, the gay marriage debate, if you will. And obviously this thing, it just seems like from about this time last year to now, it's just completely changed how people feel. And you have to think, if this is a guy that one of the reasons he got elected was because of a lot of scare tactics on gay marriage back 8 years ago, his time passed him by. He's very big on social conservative issues. And obviously, as far as the conservative, you know, stool with their three legs, they talk about the social one's the one that's serving them the least. Catherine, it's time passed him by.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's a big outspoken group about gay marriage in the Republican side of Georgia politics. I think they're still pretty negative about the whole idea. I haven't gotten any other message about that. But I think the ultimately the question is going to be who else runs. And I think that it's probably the fact that he's running is probably has, you know, other either already elected or previously elected or, you know, people who are interested in running saying, oh, well, this is my chance because he can't, if I run against him, he can't win. You know what I mean?
Like Ed Lindsay is
running.
I think
Ed Lindsay's going to run
that district a little more because that district, this is not Phil Gingrich's district that Tim and I lived in. This is one that moved more into Cobb County and more into North Fulton. It's a much more probably socially moderate district than the state Senate district that Barry Loudermilk serves today, and certainly more conservative than one he probably originally served back in 94 or 2004.
Well,
I don't know why I want to go back 10 years.
Well, make a call for me then. Who's more likable in this new district? Would it be Barry Loudermilk or would it be Bob Barr?
That's right. Bob Barr's running too. Now, is Bob Barr running as a Republican or is he
No, he's running as a Republican. He's
not running as a Libertarian.
No.
And I will tell you that's going to probably people that would not like Barry Loudermilk, that's going to give a candidate for them to have, but then that's going to help Barry Loudermilk coalesce whatever socially conservative votes there to possibly help him get a spot in the runoff. And then it's who gets other troops. Of those three names, and I'll try to find who else is looking at that race. Actually, Susan Davis is looking at that race as well. I've never heard of her. And then Trisha Pridemore is looking at that district too, Judson Hill. So some big names. But let's just say it's Lindsey Barr and Loudermilk. I would think Lindsey becomes the odds-on favorite. But then if it gets to be where all these people run, then I just don't think at the end of the day, after a runoff, Barry Loudermilk survives. I just think he's a little past his time, and that district's a little more cosmopolitan than him. Yeah.
I think the winner comes from Cobb County, just in sheer numbers. He's in Bartow County. He can't pull the Cobb County numbers. a strong Cobb County candidate is just going to beat him on sheer numbers, right?
One would think if it's a, you know, if it's a party, you know, or I'm sorry, a county vote, like, hey, where do you come from? And I'll tell you this, I think politics in the last few years has become less of that, you know, my area, if you will. Because particularly in the Republican primary, you got to remember, a lot of them, they don't like government, so they don't necessarily want you to bring home the bacon. What's the old don't kill the pig mentality? So, you know, some of that comes into play, if you will. Well, guys, I tell you, we're down to about 20 minutes in the show, and I know that public policy polling has always got a new poll for us, it seems like. This not just the good old how does, you know, here are the two candidates are, how do you feel about them, but they had the conspiracy poll, and after reading this, I have learned I am not at all a conspiracy theorist. I didn't think I ever really was one, but I really know I am not one because, like I told y'all when we were studying up for this, I don't believe in a single one of these conspiracies. You know, there's the one where I could say I can't prove it one way or the other, and we'll get to that. But, I mean, my goodness, I didn't even know that people were even worried about lizard people, but apparently 4% of voters think that lizard people are gaining control in our societies and getting political power. I didn't even know such a thing existed. Also, fluoride in the water system. Yeah, I knew they put fluoride in the water system, but I thought that was to keep our teeth healthier. But apparently some people believe there are other sinister reasons. Catherine, what are some of the crazy things you took out of this poll?
Well, you know, the thing that I took out of this poll that I found the most interesting was the number of people who are sort of undecided or don't know their opinion about these certain conspiracy theories. For instance, what was the one I thought? So 13% of the people think that President Obama is the Antichrist, and 13% of the people are not sure. So how can you not be sure if the president, if you think the president is the Antichrist?
Well, and of course that one, you know, of course they could ask that about Bush, and there's going to be some slim sliver of Democratic detractors that call him the Antichrist. And then, you know, now a lot of the Republican detractors. And I think there's maybe a certain percentage of people, whoever's the president, they just think the Antichrist. I mean, they're just reactionary weirdos. But you're right. I mean, you think you would have kind of a firm opinion on that one way or the other.
Yeah, the shape-shifting reptilian people, that was a surprise to me. I mean, I've seen that movie, but I didn't realize there were actually, you know, 4% of the people that believed it, and 7% of the people aren't sure.
Yeah. Now, Tim, what are some things you took out of this one?
Well, Catherine, let me start by saying some people will believe anything. There were people who called the University of Alabama just to find out when Forrest Gump went to school there. That being said, this thing that says 15% of voters say the government or the media adds mind-controlling technology to TV broadcast signals. That's a reach, guys. I mean, you know, they say, he even said here the so-called tinfoil hat crap. Yeah. The tinfoil hats are out in force and right under it. It's the thing that you've always heard about, contrails. You ever heard the conspiracy stuff about contrails? You know, the exhaust behind airplanes? That is actually chemicals that are sprayed by the government to do whatever the masses on the ground, they need them to do. And there are actually people that will go inside and hide from those things. I can't believe that one out of every 20 people in the country believes that nonsense. But that's pretty sick there. Although you said you didn't believe any of these, David, 29% of voters believe aliens exist. Yeah, I believe, you know, it's logical to think that's probably true, considering there's a very large universe. I know we can't prove they're out there, And thank goodness they probably haven't found us. I'm like Stephen Hawking. I think if they ever did find us, it would not be for a good reason. But I'm with them on that one. What about
well,
you?
Well, and Catherine, you mentioned about the undecided. Now, here's the thing. I don't know that they don't exist, but I've seen no proof that they do. So I don't mind saying I may be on the minority on this show, but I don't mind saying I'm with the 71, and I guess it's probably some undecideds in there. They don't exist because we don't have proof they do or they don't. But obviously it's more plausible than the 7% of the people that thought the moon landing was fake.
But see, what it says is they believe aliens exist. They don't know aliens do. If they knew aliens did, I'd like to have some of what they're smoking. But, you know, it says they believe it, and so do I.
Well, here's another one talking about the aliens. 21% say a UFO crashed in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. They're exact on the year and everything. And the U.S. government covered it up. 27% of Romney voters think that, and only 16% of Obama voters. Now, is this the fact that Harry Truman was president or something? But why are the Republicans more likely to think that there was the Roswell, New Mexico cover-up in the 40s? Catherine?
I don't know. I don't know why that would be more Republican. In fact, I don't know. I have no clue. I didn't think very much about that one.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm certain I know, because Republican conservative voters, and they've been this way for years, are more likely to distrust the government. Therefore, if the government's involved in it, there has to be a conspiracy or something covered up.
That may be it. Well, I'm talking about another one, the New World Order. Now, if you say does it exist, it was in wrestling back in the 90s, but apparently there's some other New World Order, and 28% of voters believe that this New World Order will eventually rule the world. And a plurality of Romney voters, 38%, think that this New World Order will take over. Who is this they, Catherine?
Well, I have some friends who believe that. And it's basically the banks. I mean, there's people who believe that the banks and the, you know, people who control the money are going to control the world.
The banks or Walmart?
Well, you know, there are people that would say that they're all tied in together, but I mean, I think that's kind of kooky. I hate to say that about my friend, but I do have a friend who's like, who will go on for an hour about this on the phone. So
Now there's a conspiracy. I finally got around to something that I might have been a little into the conspiracy on. I do see a day that in which the American, you know, shopping market share will be so controlled by Walmart, they will be able to set the prices of pretty much everything. Whatever Walmart says something sells for, that's what it'll sell for. I don't know if that's a conspiracy, but I do think that their market share has grown so much that that could happen, and I don't think that's a good thing because that's not really a free market.
This particular thing, though, David, is nothing new, this secretive power elite with a globalist agenda. The John Birch Society back in the 1960s was talking about this very thing, that there was a secret. Of course, they tied it into the communists and the Bilderberg Conference and the Trilateral Commission and the you know, they threw a bunch of those groups together and said they were all conspiring to form a one-world government. And by the way, whatever big Democrat happened to be around then was at the head of it, naturally. So it's not something new. This goes back a long way. And again, it goes back to this paranoia about the government, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely gets into that, if you will. So I guess there'll be more and more of these. I tell you what, kudos to Tom Jensen for coming up with all these polls out of nowhere. I tell you, another one I didn't even know about was, and I guess we talked about it before the show, 5% of voters believe Paul McCartney actually died in 66. And I guess he's one of two living Beatles and probably seems to be healthier than Ringo Starr. I didn't even know this was a thing, but apparently 5% actually think he's dead. Although, don't you get the idea that they could just ask about somebody and 5% is almost margin of error?
Oh, I don't know. That was a big thing. I mean, it was a big thing when I was a teenager. It was, you know, we're all listening to the record, trying to listen to the end of it where it says Paul is dead, and we're all, like, looking at all the album covers and, you know, looking for signs, like, in all the songs, like, oh, that's about Paul McCartney. No, I mean, it was a big thing. It was a general topic of conversation. Right, Tim?
Yeah, oh, yeah, it was. But what I was wondering, this 5%, who do they think they've been seeing on television doing these concerts all these years? Is that somebody else? I mean, when they say it's Paul McCartney, do they not believe that?
You'd think they'd ask about Elvis, because isn't that more of
there's probably more of them than that thinks he's alive, you know.
Yeah.
Although, I guess at this point, you might have said, hey, I believe he didn't die in the late 70s, but since then he's passed away, because, I mean, it's kind of like the Weekly World News used to show pictures of, like, you know, John F. Kennedy, and he'd have been, like, 90, and you're like, well, I saw the film of him getting shot, but even if you believe that, he's probably still not alive because, you know, natural causes, let's just be honest.
Yeah, really.
Well, I think, Tim, if you think too closely about most of these things, you'll think, well, how do they possibly think that? You know, I mean, some of them are, you know, bigger, but, like, you can't give shape-shifting reptilian people much thought before you sort of disregard it. Right?
I guess some people have been watching too much Land of the Lost and believe in the police act. Well, let's move on. This is apparently not a conspiracy. CNN is thinking about bringing back Crossfire, probably one of the most famous political shows, maybe their most famous show of their history since 1980. Crossfire. Apparently, I know at one point it came under fire itself. Jon Stewart felt it was actually bad for the political discourse. But I watched Crossfire a lot of times off and on, different reincarnations of it. It used to be on 7:30 at night. Then it later it became like an afternoon show, kind of like 4:30. I never thought it was a bad thing. I mean, it was people debating a topic, and it was going to lead to arguments. But I mean, some shows were better than others, you know, and maybe some weren't the highest discourse, but some were. And it seemed like it was good programming and done right could be effective. Tim, you think they should bring it back?
I'd like to see it. It was on for 23 years, and I know they're looking to boost their ratings, and they're changing their shows and personnel. People like, what's his name, Ali Burshi and James Carville, Mary Madeline, they're gone now, and people like Jake Tapper is joined them, and they're just trying to shake the thing up. I think CNN is kind of caught in a crossfire. I would say that word, wouldn't I? But, you know, MSNBC has the left end of the spectrum locked up, and Fox certainly has the right end of the spectrum locked up, and CNN is kind of being squeezed in the middle, and the only time they get ratings is during the election cycles, when they do just a marvelous job at that. And so, you know, I'd like to see something like that come back. The Sunday morning talk shows use their roundtable, their panel discussions. They modeled that at the Crossfire, because years and years ago, they didn't really do that. I'd like to see them give it a try, just to see what happens. But who would they use?
I don't know. We can get into that. Now, it is a sad state of affairs. Basically, Tim, you're saying when people, the average person just wants to find out news, they turn to CNN, but that doesn't give you good ratings. day in and day out, and that's kind of a sad state of affairs. It does, and that's sad. Catherine, do you think they should bring back Crossfire?
Well, I would like to see a show like that that examines the issues in a debate format. But I just worry that it'll be too bombastic. You know, they'll just start yelling at each other. I remember the first years of Crossfire. I think it was with Tom Braden and Pat Buchanan. Is that right?
Right.
Right. I think Buchanan and Novak, and then later Tucker
and Novak,
Carlson.
Yeah.
Michael Kingsley was one of the Democrats. Then Bob Beckel, James Carville, Paul Begala. Yeah, they were all in there.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the early years. I used to watch it with my parents. My mother loved it. She loved Tom Braden. But I'm just concerned that it'll just be, you know, more yelling and screaming from the two sides. I mean, I think it would be helpful to have a show like that if it really was, you know, meaningful debate with, you know, in-depth discussion about the issues, but I'm just afraid that it wouldn't be.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on good. I think you'd have to get thoughtful people. Like when Paul Begala and Tucker Carlson were on, I thought they did a good, thoughtful job. I mean, you could get like a Rush Limbaugh, a Glenn Beck, and I'm sure you can come up with Democratic, you know, counters to that that are not, you know, well-meaning, that just want to, you know, throw flames and get attention, and that wouldn't serve anybody. But, I mean, Tucker Carlson, he's a conservative, and probably 9 times out of 10 wants to debate the issues. I remember one time he made the statement that if Hillary Clinton sold 1 million copies, whatever it was for her book advance, that he'd eat his shoe. And she did sell that amount of copies. Now, she brought a cake in the form of a shoe. He ate it, and he was so good-natured. And he said, look, you know, you exceeded my expectations, and I was wrong. And I thought that was a case where, you know, and you could have a Democratic guy saying the same thing. You know, I was wrong. Kudos to you. And that was healthy, and I didn't think that deserved the criticism that it got, if you will. Now, speaking of shows I'd like to see him bring back, I don't know about you, Tim and Catherine, but I would love to see him bring back Inside Politics, even if it was just a 30-minute version. I think at one point it grew from like 30 to 90 minutes if they just had a 30-minute version.
Yes.
I'd record that thing, DVR it. I'd watch it every night. It was probably my favorite political program of all time, and also my favorite program on CNN. Catherine, Tim, which one, if you had to pick one, Crossfire or Inside Politics? Tim?
I'm going to go with Inside Politics. I really, 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 really enjoyed that show, and Catherine brought up something. I'm not sure they would have the quality of people for Crossfire that they had years ago. Are you, Catherine?
I'm not. I mean, I think they could probably get that quality of people, but I don't think it would bring the ratings with it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, if they're looking for ratings, then they're going to have, you know, some, you know, back and forth that gets, you know, bombastic. That's what people want. It's not me, but I think they think that's what people want. I don't know what people want, but.
Yeah.
David, you know what they need at CNN? They need Captain Ted back. That's what's missing. After he gave it up, you know, the man knew how to run things. He really did.
Well, he had an innovative topic. I will tell you one reason that I think CNN's had to change, and in some ways it's not for the better. Remember, headline news, it would be the same old 30-minute newscast over and over and over. Well, it is time. It was very good. It would come on, and, you know, if you just wanted to see the news, you could tune in there and watch it and be caught up. Today, nobody does that. They're going to go on their phone. They're going to go on the Internet. They're going to find out things instantaneously, and they don't need that anymore. And now headline news, I never watch the thing anymore, but it's Nancy Grace, and it's all these other shows that are definitely not headline news. And I think in probably a lot of ways, the regular CNN, the regular Fox News, the regular MSNBC, now it kind of came around post-Internet, But they've had to change what they do, because if you just want the news quickly, you can go on the internet, find out what you need to know, and move on. So that's part of the problem and why they've had to change, because what Ted Turner originally envisioned is now obsolete because of technology.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's that. Well,
yeah.
Speaking of that, it's 8 o'clock, and so that's that for this week's Kudzu Vine. But next week, Martha Zoller, who has a new site called Z Politics, Martha's been on with us in the past, but it's been a while, is going to rejoin us and tell us about her new site and what she's been doing. So until then.
Good night, guys. Evening.
Good night, guys.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force?